Among the graffiti preserved on the Reichstag's walls in Berlin, one can still see the two cities linked by Russians exulting in their revenge, forcing the invaders from their furthest point of eastward advance right back to the heart of the Reich. Hitler, too, remained obsessed with this decisive defeat. In November 1944, as the Red Army was grouping beyond the Reich's eastern frontiers, he pointed back to Stalingrad. Germany's reverses had all begun, he said in a major speech, with the breakthrough of Russian armies on the Romanian front on the Don in November 1942. He blamed his hapless allies, under-armed and ignored on the vulnerable flanks either side of Stalingrad, not his own obsessive refusal to heed the warnings of danger. Hitler had learned nothing and forgotten nothing. That same speech demonstrated with terrible clarity the distorted logic in which the German people had allowed themselves to become ensnared. When published, it was entitled "Capitulation Means Annihilation." He warned that if the Bolshevists won, the fate of the German people was destruction, rape, and slavery, with immense columns of men treading their way to the Siberian tundra. Hitler vehemently refused to acknowledge the consequences of his own actions, and the German people realized far too late that they were trapped by a terrifying confusion of cause and effect. Instead of eliminating Bolshevism as he had claimed, Hitler had brought it to the very heart of Europe. His abominably cruel invasion of Russia had been carried out by a generation of German youth weaned on a demonically clever combination. Goebbels' propaganda did not simply dehumanize Jews, commissars, and the whole Slav people, it made the German people fear and hate them. Hitler, in these gigantic crimes, had managed to manacle the nation to him, and the approaching violence of the Red Army was the self-fulfillment of their leader's prophecy. Stalin, while happy to make use of symbols when it suited him, was far more calculating. The Reich's capital was indeed the culmination of all the operations of our army in this war, but he had other vital interests. Not least of these was the plan formulated under Lavrenti Beria, Stalin's Minister of State Security, to strip atomic research establishments in Berlin of all their equipment and uranium before the Americans and British arrived. The work of the Manhattan Project, carried out in Los Alamos, was already well known in the Kremlin thanks to the pro-communist spy, Dr. Klaus Fuchs. Soviet science was far behind, and Stalin and Beria were convinced that if they were to seize the German laboratories and scientists in Berlin before the Western Allies got there, then they too could produce an atom bomb like the Americans. The scale of the human tragedy by the end of the war is beyond the imagination of everyone who did not live through it, but especially of those who have grown up in the demilitarized society of the post-Cold War age. Yet this moment of fate for millions of people still has much to teach us. One important lesson is that one should be extremely wary of any generalization concerning the conduct of individuals. Extremes of human suffering and even degradation can bring out the best as well as the worst in human nature. Human behavior, to a large extent, mirrors the utter unpredictability of life or death. Many Soviet troops, especially in frontline formations, unlike those who came behind, often behaved with great kindness to German civilians. In a world of cruelty and horror, where any conception of humanity had almost been destroyed by ideology, just a few acts of often unexpected kindness and self-sacrifice lighten what would otherwise be an almost unbearable story. This book could not possibly have been researched without the help of many people. I'm first of all deeply obliged to the directors and staff in numerous archives, Colonel Shuvashin and the staff of the Central Archive of the Ministry of Defense, Tsarmo, at Podolsk, Dr. Natalia Borisovna Volkova and her staff at the Russian State Archive for Literature and the Arts, RGALI, Dr. Vladimir Kuzlenkov and Dr. Vladimir Korotayev of the Russian State Military Archive, RGVA, Professor Kirill Mikhailovich Anderson and Dr. Oleg Vladimirovich Normov at the Russian State Archive for Social Political History, RGASPI, Dr. Manfred Kerig, Director of the Bundesarchiv Militärarchiv Freiburg, and Frau Weibel, Dr. Rolf Dieter Müller and Hauptmann Luktzat at the